and good day, good night. Welcome to World Cup Today for just a few more days, less than a week left. In World Cup Today, we're going to have a little soccer today conversation today as well, the Canadian review, and we'll finish the show by previewing the semifinals of this World Cup. But first of all, good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning from steaming hot Toronto. It's a beautiful day out here. I'm doing this in the beautiful sunshine, enjoying summer, which is finally here, and the World Cup, which is finally done. But that's a sad thing. But we'll. I think that losing the week, getting my weekends back, will be nice, though.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, and like that's what I was thinking too. I'm like, I'm a big cycling fan, right? And the Tour de France is starting, and usually when it's a Tour de France, right after the Tour de France, I do my French cycling podcast, and I hop on my bike and I go for rides. But I couldn't do that for the last 3 weeks because there's games in the afternoon, games in the morning. Yeah, I miss my bike.
Yeah, and look, we're going to have a solid, 2 weeks before really we crank into the European season again. So, you know, it's all the same. But
Ronaldo
anyway.
Transfer, MLS transfer starts today. And let's start there, Dwayne. We'll do a Canadian review in a few seconds. If you're brand new to our show, if you're listening to us, if you discovered us during the World Cup, Dwayne covers Toronto FC, I cover the Montreal Impact, and together we cover Major League Soccer, and that's our daily show, Monday to Friday, 10 a.m., Soccer Today. And it's getting really close again. I started to pay attention to what's going on in the league, of course, but today, July 10th, the transfer window is open.
Yeah, and TFC already made it came out backwards, as it often does in MLS, with Akeche getting moved yesterday, which would open up some space for TFC. So you would suspect that they would use that to address their injury problems at the back. Drew Moore does not look like he's going to be back anytime soon. We're not too sure about Josie Altidor. TFC has some significant issues, and Akeche just never really fit. He seemed like he might have some talent, but never really worked out. He couldn't really break in. It was an expensive guy to have hanging around on the bench. So that's sort of the first rumblings of this. The summer window is always an interesting one in Major League Soccer, because this is when the main world, as most people know, when most of the main transfers around the world go on is in the summer, whereas MLS is backwards because it has, you know, a summer schedule, as it should, because our climate demands that, and anyone who tells me otherwise, I want to shake, because they are probably from Texas. But
I've never stepped foot in the Northeast or the North Midwest or Canada in winter, in December. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I appreciate that the extreme heat's an issue down there in the summer too. I get that, but it's a hell of a lot easier to schedule around that and to take water breaks than it would be to literally not be able to play in places like Montreal and Toronto during those months. But at any rate, it's an interesting sort of dynamic, because you're not too sure if MLS can play. Well, they can't. We know they can't play with the big boys when it comes to the financial spending. So it's more of a tweak situation in the summers. And they kind of, you don't get a lot of moves really quick. You don't get a lot of huge moves other than the old school DPs that are sort of coming, you know, they're retiring basically in their mind. And I think we're going to see less and less of those guys coming in. And usually those signings take place more ahead of the game, so you know they're happy. The Wayne Rooney move would be the obvious one in this particular window right now. But so don't expect much, but you can tweak a little bit. You can add some value there. I know Amanda Cooper came in for TFC in 2016, and as much as we, you know, sort of think of Cooper as not being exactly the most inspiring player, he was a piece that did help them, particularly in the 2016 playoff run. And you know, he basically set up the goal that salted it away in the MLS Cup in 2017. So that's the type of player you might expect to bring in this window. You might expect to move players like Akeche that weren't really fitting in to open up that space. But I wouldn't expect massive moves if they haven't already been announced.
The biggest name being linked with MLS over the last few months has been Fernando Torres. He announced to Atleti that he was leaving Atleti a few weeks ago. And last week he announced that he will announce his new club on July 10th. Weird when it's a North American transfer window opening. Does Chicago really seem like a logical place for Fernando Torres?
Yeah, it does. And it sort of speaks to, look, I mean, I don't know how Torres is going to do in MLS. I really don't have a good handle on this. As I said with the Wayne Rooney situation, I'm not a guy that's going to completely dismiss the possibility of these older players coming in and having an impact, because they are immensely talented and they're, you know, at their peak of their talents, were more talented than guys in MLS, clearly. But yeah, Chicago, it's a big market that's always underutilized itself. And Schweinsteiger coming in was sort of the first sort of intent, statement of intent that they made, and this would be certainly another one. We, you know, certainly know that that there were other teams interested in him, but I'm not too sure whether, you know, we're still, I think Torres still had a bit of a say in where he was going, right? And unfortunately for Montreal fans, I think that say was not, you know, Montreal. But
I would say fortunately,
Chicago does seem to fit.
I would say fortunately for the Montreal Impact fan, because I don't believe Fernando Torres is necessarily worth a DP slot in today's MLS. And that might be like a bold statement, but even a Rooney, I would not waste one of my three DP slots on a Wayne Rooney. If I had a lot of TAM, maybe. But for a DP slot, I don't know. I would have my reservations with players like Rooney and Fernando Torres when we've seen the most impactful type of DP over the last few years hasn't been the big name superstar that comes in. It has been the guy that you barely know that comes in and really makes a name for himself here.
Yeah, I think Villa would be the notable exception, but even David Villa, he wasn't at the same level as those guys, right? He was always just a shade below Giovinco, bench player for Juve. I think that those guys that are playing at a top level but are a little hungrier to prove themselves are the who you should be targeting. Yes. You know, I'm a little more positive on the big names than I think you are, and that certainly than most people are, simply because I do think that sometimes MLS fans get a little defensive with the retirement league stuff and tend to dismiss the possibility that these guys, you know, at their top were much better than MLS players. I mean, let's be honest, they were. But yeah, there's other issues. And, you know, if you're new to this, really quickly, the crib notes of this would be that it's a very athletic league with high demands in terms of travel and heat and extreme weather and things like that they're not necessarily used to. They have to be incredibly athletic, and they have to have an incredible level of drive to be successful in Major League Soccer. So the talent isn't enough on its own to get these guys by, and sometimes we see, you know, particularly in high-profile cases like Pirlo, like Gerard, where that drive just didn't seem to be there, or the athleticism was gone to the point that they couldn't compete. So just because you have a big name doesn't mean that you are going to succeed. But, you know, David Villa was a fairly big name that did thrive in this league. So it is also possible that you can be successful. So,
and also, yeah. 2015 is a long time ago. That's when David Villa arrived with NYCFC in their first season. And the league has grown since then as well. Just look at Atlanta. Just look at the famous Miguel Amaron, Josef Martinez, who has been the probably most prolific scorer over the last 18 months in Major League Soccer. Well, not probably. He has been the most prolific scorer in the last 18 months in Major League Soccer. So when I look at players like Josef Martinez and Miguel Almiron, I do feel that there's a lot of gems still hidden or dwindling in South America and other places to be effective. And we'll see if that happens. And there's going to be some trades. There's going to be some player movement over the next few days. I just quickly think about the Montreal Impact and players like Dominic Arguero, who has been on the outs since Rémi Gaud comes in. And Rémi Gaud wanted a specific type of striker to play for his team, and Dominic Arguero, for some reason, is not fitting that mold that Rémi Gaud has. And he always been honest and open with Dominic Arguero about it. And Dominic Arguero, I have to say, I tip my hat to him. A professional, trains like it's any other day, and is physically ready and isn't always a good shape. 32-year-old Ghanaian player Dominic Arguero could be a help for some team that need maybe some depth at the striker position, or someone who can play on the right flank with some pace. So Dominic Arguero will probably find a new address in the next few days.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, he's the type of player that's moved around Major League Soccer for a reason. He does fit kind of in the athletic sort of mold. Hell, had Jordan Hamilton not scored two goals this year, I might have said, well, you know, he's worth another role to come back to Toronto, because you kind of need another striker, I think, because I do think that Ricketts at this point is career is kind of a 10 to 15 minute guy.
First DP for FC Edmonton.
There's that too with Ricky. I think this probably is his last season in TFC for sure, and you know we thank him for his service, of course. But nonetheless, yeah, Doro, to get back to him, he's a good piece that you can get relatively cheaply. Although that is the problem, his salary is not great, but you're only paying half of it because if you don't know when it comes to a cap situation, you just pay. It's a salary budget. It's not a cap. That's a bit of a semantics thing, but it matters when you're talking about stuff like this because you're only going to need to free up half of his contract to put him on your books because that's the first half of it's already been paid by Montreal's books. He makes him a little easier to move now halfway through the season than he would have been at the start of the year where his salary was a little bit inflated. I don't know it off the top of my head, and I'm not near a computer right now, but
it's about $320,000, Dominic Angerov, per year. So you were talking about maybe a $160,000 cap hit. That's without applying any GAM because you could do that too. So we'll see.
Yeah, he's more movable now in the below 200s than he would be above. And, you know, like I said, any team where I can make the argument for TFC, I haven't heard anything, so I'm not suggesting that. I mean, he's actually obviously played here before in Montreal and Toronto. As much as they have the rivalry off the pitch, they're on the pitch, you tend to work together a lot more than we, you know, sometimes think they should. So I wouldn't be stunned if that were to happen. But I do think that, you know, Jordan Hamilton getting a couple goals this year, and TFC has been scoring again. They haven't been defending at all. That suggests to me that they're going to address some needs at the back, not necessarily some attacking needs. Because they did have 7 goals in the last 2 games, so that part of the game seems to be coming around again.
Yeah, well, let's move into the Canadian Review right now. Montreal Impact are maybe, they might be the hottest team in the league as we speak. 4 wins in a row, 3 straight shutout, and then a goal conceded at the 71st minute off a bad bounce and a easy Kishan Gashly goal, like a 1-foot tap-in that I call. But outside of that, Montreal were 440 minutes without conceding a goal, which is a crazy record when they were like 400 minutes without scoring before this great run. Montreal has only conceded 3 goals since June the 2nd, Dwayne. And two of those goals were an own goal and a goal that was actually offside that VAR missed in Dallas.
It's been a funny little run, too, because think about 5 games ago, that was when, you know, fireworks were going off and it seemed like all was lost and it was chaos in Montreal and the fans were screaming and, prominent radio hosts were blocking people on Twitter. Like, a lot can happen in a month in Major League Soccer, right?
We're looking at you, Tony.
Yeah, it seems ages ago now. Well, the World Cup hadn't started yet, so it was ages ago in my mind. But yeah, it's been a strange little month. And kind of hidden, right? Like, is that part of it? That the pressure came off?
Because
suddenly no one's paying attention? I don't know.
What really happened is, you know, when you hit the bottom of the barrel, they didn't really, but let's just imagine it this way so you understand. When a team, when a group of men, women, group of athletes gets challenged, there's 2 ways to respond, right? You either internally destruct and start to blame each other and then it's really done, or you just roll up your sleeve and go harder at work and you become accountable to each other and you actually start listening to the coach. And you actually start playing the way he wants you to play. And that's what happened the last 4 weeks. And one comment that Rémi Garde mentioned Saturday after the game in his post-game press conference, he mentioned, players listen to me now. And they listen really attentively with the last 4 results. And that bodes well. For a coach like Rémi Garde who comes into this league, and we've talked about a discovery year for Rémi Garde and his coaching staff, you have to adjust, you have to understand the league, you have to start moving things around and start to realize that, you know, this game is the same damn game, and I'm going to do what I think is best, what I've been doing, and not just change everything about my tactics or my identity as a coach. I'm going to do what best as I can, and it starts at the training session. And he always mentioned that, and that's why he was always rewarding players like Ken Krolicki, who people were really surprised. He's a 3rd-round draft pick, the only draft pick last year that Montreal Impact kept. And he literally played like 80% of the game so far for the Montreal Impact because he trains really well. And that parlays, when your players trust that if they train really hard, it's going to translate into playing time, there's a certain work ethic that comes into play in the training sessions. And if you're wondering why some players are not playing, don't ask yourself too much. Miguel doesn't see what he wants to see in training. And you see the translation of those players really practicing hard, getting the confidence of the coach, and then being able to replicate this in games. Another thing he said is, you play like you train. It's not that difficult. You train hard, guess what? It'll be easier when you play.
No, for sure. And, you know, quickly, we do need to break and get onto the World Cup preview in a minute because we have to be tight today for my scheduling needs, and I apologize for that. By tight, I mean a half hour. You get it every day, so, you know, I'm not going to apologize too much. But we are going to talk to a Vancouver expert in a while, so let's just stay focused on Montreal. The other aspect that I think might be coming into play right now is he made a big focus on getting a fitness foundation in the preseason, to the point that they weren't really training other aspects of the game. And I think that kind of bit them in the bum a little bit early on, particularly when it comes to the set pieces. Now that foundation's at play and we're into the grind of the summer, and it really is the grind right now in Major League Soccer, this is where things start to shake out. Maybe that fitness foundation is starting to pay off and allow Montreal to hang into games and be more athletic, more fit than the teams are playing. And they can converse as well, I should say, start to work on some of those details that they maybe had to give short shrift to in the early part of the year.
Yeah, exactly. And that confidence, that those relationships that the coach has started to build with those players and the history and the fact that, you know, when you go through a difficult times, it does bring the players together, right? And you develop new things, you discover new players, new ways to play. And what has been really impressive for me over the last four wins, it's not just four victories signed by Nacho Piatti. It's not one player carrying the entire team. It's the entire team contributing. We've seen great play by Lovitz on the left flank as a left wing back, playing amazingly, trying to not shy away from his pass as a midfielder. And when he sees the opening, he goes for it. All those little details, the lack of worry if you make a mistake. You remember when we used to talk about Montreal? One guy comes to play, makes one mistake, you don't see him again for 2 years. That has been taken away. And I really like the fact that players are trusted and you're allowed to make mistake if you just play your role. If you're Krenn Kurilicki, you're not trying to play like Piatti. You keep it simple. You do your task. And as a team, if everyone does its task, four wins in a row, only one goal conceded.
Yeah, and look, to tie this into Vancouver a little bit, and Carl Robinson in particular, to wrap this up, this session up before we preview the France-Belgium semifinal, fine lines. That's the theme of the Major League Soccer in 2018 is fine lines. And you can look at it from fine lines in the perspective of Montreal being, you know, maybe considered the worst team in the league or among the worst teams in the league to winning four in a row. You can consider it fine lines from TFC being the best team of all time to struggling to even get up to sixth place and, you know, being really appreciative of a single point on the road during a very tough spell of games. It's a fine line in this league between good, bad, and indifferent. So the second half of the season should be fun. And once the World Cup ends and I can sort of take a breath and get back into it, I think I'm going to enjoy this sprint down. It's almost fun from a TFC perspective because they buried themselves in such a hole. Is it, can they pull themselves out? Can they pull Seattle?
They basically have to attack for the rest of the season. Like, never mind defending, just go out and score goals. Speaking of TFC, what's the problem with penalties? Again?
Well, they got to pull the ball away from the little Italian. There's something going on with that. Either he's been scouted to death or there's a confidence issue there on the penalties. I mean, Vasquez missed some too. Josie, I think, might be the answer when he comes back, but we just don't know what the hell's happening with Josie. Like, he might be gone for the year at this point, and that's going to be a major blow.
Jordan Hamilton takes the penalties from now on. Why not, Canadian?
Why not?
Yeah,
Jonathan Rosario has 10 goals in all competitions this season. He's like the fourth TFC player of all time to do that, which, you know, I'd like to just throw in the face of all those boo birds in the crowd for the last few years that get blinded by Rosario's passport and think he's quote unquote sucks, even though the rest of us are like, watch his game, people.
Yeah, it's funny.
No,
eh?
10 goals.
It's funny
he should be the
Go ahead.
He should be in the All-Star game. He won't be.
Yeah.
Because he's Jonathan Rosario, not Sebastian Giovinco. And TFC's only going to get one player in this All-Star game because of the position to play. But it should be Rosario.
And Zlatan should not be there. Even though he scored 11 goals, it's about, like, anyways. It's not about names, but anyways. We'll touch on the All-Star game eventually. It's not something that Dwayne and I usually cover that much because, well, this is soccer. It's not about, like, Juventus. And Ronaldo won't be there. So exactly like he wasn't last year. Exactly. So let's move on to the semifinals for a second. We're not going to dwell on today's game too much because by the time some of you listen to this, the semifinal between France and Belgium will be over. But this World Cup, those two semifinals were my predictions, yes, but those have been quite an amazing knockout stage so far in the World Cup. We have the Battle of the Neighbors this afternoon, France and Belgium.
Yeah, and it's going to be a fun one. I think that, you know, as I've said a couple times already in World Cup today, I like the way that the bracket shaked out. I know that there are purists out there that would like to see, like, a more glorified final and are going to call this one, quote-unquote, the real final. I don't buy that. I think whoever makes the final can win it, particularly, I just think they can because this has been the unpredictable World Cup. And why not have a Belgian World Cup winner? Why not Croatia? Why not England? Hell, it's a lot of fun. And France. France. No one's going to say, why not France? I mean, you know, yeah. that one's predictable. But nonetheless, yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. And France, the way they've been building, though, I really like the way Belgium played in the quarterfinal. Absolutely. And, I mean, you can't ignore the fact they eliminated Brazil. But the way France has been building over the last few games and has effectively been finishing off games, I think that it's going to be a difficult task for a Belgium team that has never felt this kind of pressure before. France is 2 years removed away from a final and yeah. Semifinals, obviously, to get to that final. They are, you know, the program has been in two World Cup finals. This is a very strong, experienced French team that for many of us was the favorite heading into this World Cup, was kind of the dark horse favorite. Like, if you want to look at the big teams and name a dark horse from them, it was kind of France.
I think we got blinded. We got blinded, though, because here, France, Belgium, and England are three of the four youngest team in this World Cup, okay? You know what that means to me? That means the selection of the teams were not based on names, were not based on past experience, past performance. They were based on performance right now. And I have to applaud Roberto Martinez, Didier Deschamps, and Gareth Southgate for making the tough decision of not bringing some players that could have made the team easily. Just look at Dimitri Payet, Lacazette, and as others in all those three type of teams. They brought the people that thought they were in form right now. I can help the team win right now. It doesn't matter if the kid's 19 years old. It's a bad example in Mbappe. But look at Pavard, or other Thomas Lemar, or other players like this for France. Or just look at Harry Maguire, for F's sakes, you know, in England. 2 years ago, he was in the stands watching the Euro in France, cheering for England. Now he plays. He was playing for Barnsley 2 years ago. Now he's, yeah. So those decisions of bringing players that are not there because of their name, but truly played themselves into a team, I think makes a big difference. And then you look at Germany. Then you look at Brazil. And you look at other teams like this that, the choice and the selection of players was not just purely on form, but it was for past contributions to the national team, past success, and because of the name. Just look at Germany and Leroy Sané. It's the easy example. But I do feel that Roberto Martinez, Gareth Southgate, and Didier Deschamps have to be applauded for their tough choices deciding to trust the young kids.
Well, Joe Hart's at home, right? Like, I mean, there's lots of examples of guys that were just automatic, pen them in months before, forever within England's camp that are no longer there. And you look at the philosophy of England as an FA as a whole has been to take a step back and focus on developing from the ground up and to really put a focus on you know, developing some good youth programs. It's not necessarily that you're going to convert directly from youth programs to the senior national team in terms of players, because that doesn't happen as much as people think. But I think it creates a philosophy and an understanding across the board, which helps the whole system. And we've seen that. And a lot of the clubs, France, for, you know, go back 20 years, France, when 25 years in the lead up to to 98, they really put a hard focus on creating a whole system that would feed it, right? And to allow it to get to the point now where it is perennially going to be considered a favorite. And I do think that the debate is over. Sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
I was going to say just what you're talking about is Clairefontaine and the national program that was built, and the young kids that started to play there when they were 13 growing up. And that system has created those players today, too. It's the same damn system since 1995, Clairefontaine, and the great production of players.
Yeah, no, precisely. And look, I don't think there's a debate anymore. We talked about the big four of world football. There's a big five now, and France is the fifth team to come into it. There's no doubt in my mind. So, and Spain's, you know, on the cusp there as well. But it really is a remarkable program. Even look at Uruguay and their approach over the past years. Their quarterfinals in this World Cup, and I think they might have even overachieved a little bit from what people thought. And had Cavani not got hurt, who knows where they are right now, right? Like, that was a very solid team, and they are also built on a philosophy of developing from the bottom of the pyramid to the top, and to try to create a full focus on it, and to not just rely on names. I mean, obviously Cavani and Suarez with Uruguay are two big names, but you're not going to ignore talent like that. Right, it's not. But it's not that there's a unique situation with that. It was into it, but obviously, generally speaking, you're not going to ignore immense talent for the favor of youth just for the sake of it. But there's just a belief and a philosophy that you accept these guys coming into the program, and you accept merit-based selection. And I think that if you look at all the successful teams within this World Cup, that's what they've done. They've gone with merit-based selection, and it's going to be a fun couple games. I do think it's going to be France-Croatia if I have to make the prediction now. That's what I have to do, but who knows? And that's the great thing about this, too, is I could also argue for Belgium-England.
Yeah, or France-England. I want to see the Channel War. I want to see the 100-year war play out in 90 minutes in the final, and that's my prediction. I'm keeping it. I'm keeping it alive. So far, go back to the last few shows, I've predicted a knockout outside of Russia beating Spain, but then Croatia beat out Russia. So my final four was the one that I predicted. And we'll come back tomorrow to review France-Belgium and to talk a bit about England and Croatia and to set the table for the rest of the week. And we'll give an update on the transfer window in Major League Soccer tomorrow. As well, as always, you can follow Dwayne on social media. At 24th Minute, you can follow myself at Kev Laramie. This show is brought to you by sportsinspired.ca. If you like great World Cup-inspired collection, we have a Wimbledon t-shirt. Well, it's not a Wimbledon t-shirt, but it's a Wimbledon-inspired t-shirt. Same thing for the Tour de France. Go to sportsinspired.ca and get yours and your 15% discount until before it's too late. So thank you for your support. As always, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork for all our Two Solitudes listeners. Tomorrow is the recording of the latest one, and we're back on a weekly basis with Two Solitudes with the end of the World Cup now in sight. And we thank you for your patience and, as always, your support. And until tomorrow, have a great soccer.